Who has contributed most to the English language? Most people would say Shakespeare. Italian? Dante. German? Well, not a playwright or a poet, but a translator.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.
Without Martin Luther, there was no German, just a collection of dialects. His translations of the Bible completely revolutionized how Christianity was practiced. They also established a common language for the German people, laying the foundations for Germany, the nation. We're talking about 498 years ago, which means in 2 years' time, it's a big anniversary. The Protestant Reformation is turning 500, and the Germans are getting ready to party like it's 1517. How ready are they? Well, the Playmobil toy company has already put out a plastic figurine of Martin Luther. He's dressed in black, he's holding a quill pen, and of course a Bible. Yeah, take that, Marvel comic book heroes. And the first run of these mini Luthers, 34,000 of them, they sold out in less than 72 hours. So, Martin Luther and the German language are the twin stars of the pod today. First, the man, and he didn't just translate the Bible, if only he had just done that. But he also wrote on many other subjects, and it came out in those writings that he was a virulent anti-Semite, which of course complicates how Germans today are commemorating his other achievements. Here's the Big Show's Matthew Bell.
It's hard to overstate just how much of a revolutionary Martin Luther was. Before this rabble-rousing monk came along, the Roman Catholic Church ran the show in most of Europe. When Luther unleashed his Reformation in 1517, he ended the Holy Roman Empire's monopoly on power. He created Germany's national language, and he transformed religious life for millions of people for centuries to come. In Germany today, the planning ahead of Luther's 500th anniversary began almost a decade ago. That's how big this is for Germans. One of the organizers gets these questions all the time. How would Luther himself mark this moment in history? And how would he weigh in on some of today's hot-button topics?
Well, you know, for me, it's always very difficult when people ask me, what would Martin Luther say, for instance, about fracking, I've been asked the other day. And I must say, I wouldn't know.
Margot Casemont is a Lutheran theologian.
I can say one thing about him. I think he would preach in a very fierce form, calling people to faith, back to faith, and to be critical citizens of their societies, not to shut up and become private in religion, but to be public.
This is where Luther preached, town church in Wittenberg, Germany. Just down the road from here, according to the legend at least, Luther railed against Catholic corruption by nailing his 95 theses to the door of the Catholic Church. That probably never actually happened. What's not in dispute, though, is that those ideas, along with the Bible that Luther translated from Latin into colloquial German, were printed and distributed across Europe, and they changed history. People from Wittenberg, understandably, are looking forward to the Luther anniversary. After Sunday service at town church, some locals don't want to give me their names. That's probably a legacy of the old communist days in this part of the former East Germany. But they say it feels pretty good to be the center of attention for a change. Look at the buildings being renovated all over town, this man says. It's unbelievable what they've done. There's a huge difference between now and the old communist days, this woman tells me. Back then, the church was marginalized. Strong believers kept religion alive, but the church was really abandoned by society, she says. In East Germany, children of clergy were refused admission to universities. But today, the German government is embracing the Luther anniversary, and tourists from all over the world are already visiting Wittenberg to have a look at the place where Luther's Reformation all began.
I was raised Lutheran K through 8, went to that private school the whole time, chapel every Wednesday, church on Sunday.
Tim McCormick grew up outside of Chicago. He's married to Allison, who grew up in a Mennonite family. As Christians, they say visiting Wittenberg is the experience of a lifetime.
This is where our faith histories intersect, because for Mennonite Anabaptist history, this is also where it starts, is with the Reformation and with Martin Luther. This is where we'd always begin. So for me, this is an important pilgrimage, and it's kind of like the root of both of our backgrounds, even though we're pretty different in our religious backgrounds.
Inside the church, I speak with Pastor Johannes Block. He says Wittenberg does feel like the center of the universe sometimes. Besides the tourists, the locals are talking about Luther's life. School kids are learning about Luther. But does that mean the anniversary is bringing Germans back to the church, I ask?
Es könnte mehr sein, sage ich ganz deutlich. Es gibt nicht so einen Zulauf zur Kirche.
If only there were more, Block says. He tells me that sociologists have found that people in the former East Germany are among the least religious people in the world. Still, he says, he tries to engage people at this historical moment to think about Luther's work. High on one of the exterior walls of the church where Luther preached is a statue that most people would find shocking. It shows a rabbi pulling up the tail of a female pig and looking into its backside, with other Jews kneeling down to suckle on the animal's teats. The sculpture predates Luther himself by 200 years, but he did allude to it in his writings, and he wasn't being critical. In fact, Luther wrote some vicious things about the Jews, and with the anniversary looming, those writings are being revisited too.
Retired professor Dietz Behring gets to the heart of the matter with his new book. You are a professor, former professor from the University of Cologne, and the title of your new book, it has a picture of Martin Luther's face on the cover here, and it says, "Was Luther an anti-Semite?" What's the answer to the question?
Yes, he was. Indeed.
Switching to German, Behring explains that Luther's main problem with the Jews was theological.
Von den Juden und ihren Lügen,
Behring mentions Luther's book called On the Jews and Their Lies. This is where Luther gives up on the idea of ever converting the Jews to Christianity. And, Behring says, he describes them as the source of all evil in German society. What did Luther want to do about it?
Alle Synagogen verbrennen. Alle jüdischen Häuser verbrennen.
Behring says Luther proposed the following: burn the synagogues, burn Jewish homes, confiscate Jewish money, round up Jewish people, put them into servitude, or just expel them. Even at the time, this was an extreme view. Luther's Protestant contemporaries rejected this stuff, and the political powers of the time refused to adopt Luther's proposals. But centuries later, the Nazis picked up on it. They pointed to Luther's writings against the Jews to show that their own anti-Semitic ideology had historic German roots. After World War II, the Protestant Church in Germany re-examined this part of its founder's teachings. Theologian Margot Casemann says the upcoming anniversary is another opportunity to examine Luther's failings as well as his triumphs.
For many people, this is new, and some are afraid that it would somehow say something negative about the figure Luther, but I think people can be wrong in their time, but also in their convictions. And Luther was or has been very wrong over against the Jews. He only met Jews twice in his lifetime, but he couldn't take it that Jews wouldn't see the Hebrew part of the Bible, what we call Old Testament, not hinting at Jesus as the Messiah.
Casemann says these troubling aspects of Luther's teachings should not be painted over, even as the church prepares to mark 500 years of Protestant Reformation.
One of the greatest achievements of Reformation was that you need educated faith. You can ask questions. You can be critical about the church. You yourself should read the Bible and sharpen your conscience, as Luther would have said that. We really need to discuss. And the Church of the Reformation has always been one of debate, and I like that about it.
Luther's main conflict, of course, was with the Roman Catholic Church. And Casemann says that fight is really over now. In a secular society, she says, Protestants and Catholics in Germany and around the world have much more that binds them than divides them. So this anniversary of the Reformation, she says, will be something for Christians from everywhere to take part in. For the world, I'm Matthew Bell, Wittenberg, Germany.
Okay, so why exactly is a guy who translated the Bible, but who also happened to be an anti-Semitic bigot, even by the standards of his day, why is he also considered the father of the German language. Well, some of it was good fortune, some of it was genius. The good fortune was this. Luther was brought up near the linguistic border that divided the two main dialects of German, Low German, spoken in the north, and Upper German in the south. Alexander Weber is a linguist at Birkbeck College at the University of London. And as far as he's concerned, where Luther lived, this border area, it made all the difference.
Luther moved across these borders as a boy, as a child, with his parents, and he was totally bilingual. It's sort of a stroke of luck in terms of the development of the German language that the key figure would actually be able to address an audience in Lower German and Upper German.
Which is what he did when he wrote his translations. But here's the genius bit. His translations liberated the Bible.
He listened to the man in the street, to the woman in the kitchen, to the child playing.
This again is Lutheran theologian Margot Kessmann.
And he created a German that was understandable to them. And so this is for our whole country of enormous influence until today. And still parts of our language is really Luther.
He had a very good knowledge of the use of colloquial language. You could imagine that the result would have been quite farcical. You know, the characters of the Bible speaking like German peasants. Quite the opposite was the case. It brought the Bible to life. And it was this formula that was different from the previous translations, which were very learned, very stilted, very educated. And this was Luther's success. His ability to handle this onslaught of the Catholic Church on his theology, but at the same time, speaking to the general public.
Always good to have the people on your side. The best way that I heard Luther's translations described came from Neil McGregor. He's director of the British Museum, something of an expert in German cultural history. In fact, he did a podcast series for the BBC on it. And he says Luther's translations turned the New Testament's Gospels into, quote, conversations you might overhear. Jesus speaking as a German carpenter to German fishermen, sort of intimate and ordinary at the same time. And yet these conversations are about, you know, why we're here. And so the Germans found themselves with a new, more direct way to worship and a new, more direct way to express themselves as well, which in time led them to call themselves Germans. Nationalism carved out of religious and linguistic reform. Now, Martin Luther, he also wrote a lot of hymns. And so just to prove that we can party like it's 1517, here's his most famous hymn. Ein fester Burg ist unser Gott. Pardon my German, a mighty fortress is our God. Luther didn't just write the words to this. He actually wrote the original music, though this version is a Johann Sebastian Bach composition based on the Luther one. What's a bit of sampling between religious composers? And that's it for this pod. We have more online, some great photos of the people and places in Matthew's story. That's at pri.org/language. It's also on Facebook, if you prefer, at the World in Words page. I'm on Twitter. My handle is Patricox, P-A-T-R-I-C-O-X. And if you haven't yet done so, check out the podcast Sideshow. It's hosted by Sean Ransforum, and I really like one of his recent episodes, a conversation with Al Madrigal, who you may know of as The Daily Show's senior Latino correspondent, fake Spanish fluency and all. It's a great, very funny conversation about being a little bit one culture, a little bit another, a little bit one language, a little bit another. You can find Sideshow at soundworks.org. Thanks for listening. I'll be back soon.
Soundworks.
Soundworks.
From PRI.